This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. Here are Friday's closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. September corn, 351 and 3 quarters, down 7 and 3 quarters. December corn, 363 and a half, down 7 and 3 quarters. March corn, 376 and a half, down 7 and 3 quarters. August soybeans, 1284 and 3 quarters, up 34 and 3 quarters. September soybeans, 1113 and 3 quarters, up 14 and a half. November soybeans, 1084 and 3 quarters, up 6 and 3 quarters. September wheat, 549 and a quarter, down 12 and a quarter. December wheat, 566, down 13. March wheat, 585 and a quarter, down 13 and 3 quarters. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Friday's Grain Market Report. And the Illinois country grain prices ended mixed on Friday afternoon. Soybeans posted gains on technical trading at the Board of Trade. And in northern and western Illinois on Friday, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 8 cents lower at 341 to 359. Soybean bids 6 to 7 cents lower at 1235 to 1268. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 7 to 8 cents lower at 339 to 360, while soybean bids were mostly 7 cents higher at 1230 to 1265. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were down 8 cents at 342 to 362. Soybean bids were up 3 to 7 cents at 1195 to 1267, while the wheat bids were 12 to 13 cents lower at 462 to 509. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were up 2 to 17 cents, ranging from 1250 to 1295. Basis ended mixed, ranging from 165 to 210 over the November. High Pro soybean meal on a truck basis offered in a range of 427.50 to 447.50, with basis ended steady to $10 per ton lower, ranging from 30 to 50 over the August. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids 5 to 8 cents lower at 362 to 382, with basis steady to 3 cents stronger at 10 to 30 over September. Illinois river barge loading elevators quoted producer corn bids down 7 to 8 cents at 371 to 377, with basis steady to 1 cent higher at 19 to 25 over September. Soybeans ended 3 to 11 cents weaker at 1197 to 1280, with basis 10 to 18 cents lower at 112 to 195 over November. East St. Louis barge loading terminal elevators placed their producer corn bids 7 cents lower at 377 to 383. These same elevators raised their soybean prices by a nickel, with quotations at 1260 to 1285. Soft red of winter wheat down 12 to 13 cents at 501 to 515. Milo down 7 to 8 at 382 to 414. Contract bids to producers for new crop delivered grain in northern and western Illinois. Country elevator bids to producers for new crop corn in those regions range from 3 and a quarter up to 336. New crop soybean bids range from 1035 up to 1068. In central Illinois, new crop corn bids range from 323 to 340, new crop soybean bids at 1039 up to 1072, and in the southern part of the state, new crop corn range from 328 up to 344, with the new crop soybean bids ranging from 1051 up to 1070. That completes our grain report for Friday. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are Friday's closing livestock futures quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. August live cattle, 152.55, down $3. October live cattle, 150, down $2.90. December live cattle, 150.25, down $3. August feeder cattle, 215.32, down $3. September feeder cattle, 214.72, down $3. October feeder cattle, 213.97, down $3. August lean hogs, 114.22, down $1. October lean hogs, 99.32, down 92 cents. December lean hogs, 89.15, down $2.67. Now time for your cash livestock report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Friday the 8th afternoon livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded 57 cents lower in the range of 104 to 115. with a weighted average carcass price of $113.56. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sows were trading $2 lower, with moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds were 80 to 84, 4 to 5 weights 83 to 88, 5 to 6 weights 86 to 91, and 6 weights and up 88 to 94. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, barrels and gilts at country buying points were trading steady to a dollar lower, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging from $78 up to $83. Receipts for Illinois hogs today totaled 3,136 head. And now the report from the Walnut Livestock Auction for Thursday, August the 7th. They had receipts of 390 head. Starting with the choice slaughter steers, they were 156 to 162. Select and choice 150 to 155. Choice slaughter Holstein steers, 143.50 to 149, with some high dressing bringing 151 to 155.50. Select and choice Holstein steers were 137.50 to 141.50, and choice slaughter heifers, 153 to 161.75. Select and choice heifers, 145 to 150. On to the slaughter cows. Premiums were bringing 129.50 to 139 with some high dressing going for 148. Breakers were 119 to 126. Boners were 108 to 110. And leans were 96. Bulls under 1,500 pounds ranged in price from 125 to 131.50. And 1,600 pound bulls and up were 122.50 to 128.50. Now in the direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a live basis traded at 157 to 161 and on a dress basis at 246 to 255.50. Heifers on a live basis traded at 157 to 160.50 and on a dress basis 246 to 254. From the National Daily Pork FOB Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts were established with 257 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $124.99, and that was $1.43 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses were $260.45, and that was $1.96 lower, with select carcasses at $2.53 even, and that was $2.26 lower. From the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 114,000. That compared to 114,000 last week and 121,000 a year ago. Year-to-date slaughter is off 7%. Hog slaughter was estimated at 345,000. That compared to 236,000 last week and 379,000 a year ago. Year-to-date hog slaughter is off 4.8%. That concludes our livestock report. This is Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
With more technology at the fingertips of farmers around the world, more data is being collected than ever before. So much so, we don't know what to do with it all yet. Big data has become more than just a buzzword, but a real concern for many farmers as they try to figure out what their rights are when it comes to data collected from their farms. President of GeoSilos, Matt Bechtel, has been working to bridge the gap between what big data really is and the common concerns farmers have.
Well, I think the biggest struggle is just understanding what it is and what it isn't. And it's a scary term because when you don't know what it is, you'd like to put these labels on it. Big data is really just data, but it's data that's either so voluminous or it's coming at us so quickly that we don't know what to do with it. So in the agricultural world, we're trying to understand how does data flow from a farm all the way up to a company or all the way back to a consumer, and how do we understand that data and how do we drive decisions from that data?
Bechdel says we're on the edge of what he calls a data revolution that spells drastic changes for the farming industry.
Yeah, just like the green revolution or the mechanical revolution, this data revolution is really about kind of accelerating how we manage day-to-day operations or decisions on the farm. And really what it's about is it's about taking what we've learned from those other revolutions and really synthesizing them and fully extracting the whole value of my management plan for fertilizer or my field operations. So it's about using data to drive decisions in addition to our farmer intuition that happens at home. I think what's going to happen is as we collect more and more data about everything we do, we're going to look at it in a more clinical sense. We're going to say what works, why did it work, you know, and what were the results, rather than what did we feel works? What's the way we've always done things? And so what we'll do is we'll take that data and we'll say we're going to confirm or deny what we've done is right. Or we're going to say, well, we were kind of right, but we need to shift some things. Data is going to help us fine-tune our management, and it's going to give us increased awareness about everything on our farm, potentially down to the plant level.
However, some are concerned that information collection and increased awareness seem to go hand in hand with an upshoot in regulations.
Yeah, I think, you know, we live in a heavy regulatory environment, and that's not going to change whether we have big data or not. Technology is allowing us to both protect ourselves as well as meet regulatory needs, which are only going to increase. So that is a reality that we face. But I think that it's more of an upside of protecting ourselves than the downside of some of the regulatory pressures.
When it comes to farmers being able to control their role in the data revolution, both now and in the future, Bechdel says not only should farmers read all the fine print, but having a goal in mind and sitting down and having a conversation with those collecting the data is key.
So the first things first, when you have data, you need to think about what you want to accomplish. And that's different for everybody. So as you do those things, you tend to want to reach out to other participants, players, cooperators, because it's not something we tend to have a lot of experts on the farm to do. So after you've decided what it is you want to accomplish, you need to sit down and have a conversation with your co-op, your provider, your equipment dealer to say, hey, I've got this data, or you're collecting this data. What access do I have? Do I own it? How are you using it? How is it shared? How is it secured and protected? We have to have a very honest conversation about that data because it represents your intellectual property. It's an asset, just like the equipment on the farm. So you have to have that conversation first. You have to know what you want to accomplish and what others are going to do as they help you. Beyond that, it's going to come down to your operation and what you need. Do you need to focus on tillage management? Do you need to focus on nutrient management? Do you need to focus on operations? You know, we're going to use the technology in many different ways, but we have to have an honest conversation about the data itself and its value.
One of the most important things to keep in mind, Bechdel says, is not to be scared of the term big data.
I think the biggest takeaway that I hope people have from today is that they should not dismiss big data because it's this vague, scary IT tech term. The reality is that most of us on our farm, on my family farm, we're not doing big data, but we're participating in a larger audience that as that data gets accumulated, it is big data and people are going to be using it. So you have to know what you're getting into. So long as we're having a very honest adult conversation with our collaborators and cooperators and we know what we want, we're going to move forward and we're going to do some really good things. But we have to have that conversation. And people just need to be aware of it.
Again, that was President of GeoSilos, Matt Bechdel. The Illinois Soybean Association recently celebrated their 50th anniversary. Along with that, they also celebrated the 100-year anniversary of soybeans being grown in Illinois. For a look at how soybeans have changed over the years, I spoke with Don Gwinnup with the Illinois Soybean Association.
Well, the soybean is an old plant. It originated in China, and there's records in China of being growing there for different purposes for probably 1,000 years, but it was very slow to come to the Americas. There were cereal crops in the Bible. The Aztec and the Incas grew corn, but the soybean was a Far Eastern crop, and until trade and transportation opened up in the late 1800s, we really didn't know what the soybean was. And we've got history that soybeans came in different ways from China. In the history, we found out that traders brought them and experimented with them. Some of them found their way to Alton, Illinois, which was probably the first recorded growth of soybeans in the late 1800s. They were planted in the garden kind of as an ornamental crop and a novelty. People were just experimenting with them to find out what they could do with them. There's a story in the history of A.E. Staley, which was a major soybean crushing company in Illinois, that Staley was born and raised in North Carolina in the late 1800s, and his father was a missionary, and he went to China for several years, and the Chinese gave him some beans as a gift to bring back to the United States, some soybeans, and he came back to North Carolina and gave his son these soybeans and said, plant these in the garden and see what you can do with them. They're kind of unknown here, but the Chinese think they have a lot of potential. So on a garden in North Carolina in the late 1800s, A.E. Staley planted these beans, and he watched them grow, and he harvested the seeds and planted them year after year, and they were just kind of a novelty, a plant that he was trying to find out what the potential was. And long story short, he came to Illinois, got interested in corn processing, actually, but he understood the soybean and watched soybeans move into Illinois, and farmers find out that they were a forage crop, they were a legume, they would flourish on the poorer soils, and the early soybeans in Illinois were used for hay and became a major hay crop in the World War I time. And then after World War I, there was interest in expanding them, and Staley was one of the first ones to experiment with processing soybeans for oil and meal. And coming from the South, he had some experience with cottonseed processing, cottonseed oil, and how to handle that. So they adapted some cottonseed processing ideas to the soybean, and learned how to crush soybeans and how to use the oil, value the oil, and found out that there was a market for the oil. And then he had to convince farmers to raise soybeans. And that was a major effort, too. And it took the land-grant college here at the University of Illinois experimenting and disseminating that information. And it took industry and education and a big sales program to the farmers of Illinois. But they caught on. They were realizing that they couldn't just raise corn and oats, and the soybean found a role as a part of the rotation, and corn and soybean rotation is the major crops in Illinois now. So it's kind of an interesting history of how we got to where we are, but soybeans are here to stay, and they're very important.
And now we are the number one state in the nation for soybean production.
That's right. In 2013, Illinois produced 460 million bushel of beans on 9.3 million acres, and we surpassed Iowa. And as the president of the American Soybean Association said this evening, and he's from Iowa, we will probably retain that title of being the number one soybean producing state if we get a couple rains here in August. We've got large acreage, and with the double crop beans in southern Illinois getting planted in a timely manner and plenty of moisture at this point anyhow, we think we got a good chance at remaining number one soybean producing state in the 2014 crop year. So we're hoping that will develop too.
And as many crops that we use in modern day agriculture, they look different than the ones that were first used, than their parent crops. And as we learned tonight, the soybean is no exception to that. It looked different, and we learned tonight that the bean itself originally looked quite different than the bean today.
That's right. A lot of the early beans were different colored. Some of them were black, some of them were brown, multicolored. Over the years, as we've bred for yield and standability and pest resistance, most of the beans have been bred to be a white color or a light yellow colored that we see now. But genetically, even today, in a hopper full of beans on a combine, you'll see an occasional black or brown bean, or you'll see an eye that's a different color, and it's a genetic mutation or a back cross or something genetically that's come out in that bean, and you can tell that there is a genetic parent somewhere along the line that was a different color from a different race of bean. And as we said, most of these came from Southeast Asia and many of them from China, and if you go over there now, you will still find multicolored beans of different races. And we use those in our genetic breeding programs today because they may have resistance for one particular disease or resistance to an insect or some asset or attribute that we want to incorporate into the modern day bean. So that big genetic pool is a good thing, and we got a lot to draw on for our research and development programs.
Well, good news for the future, and an exciting future is what it looks to be for the soybean in Illinois.
Yes, we're glad to celebrate 100 years of production and start on the second 100 years, and it's just hard to tell where it will go, but I'm sure it'll be exciting, and the Soybean Association wants to be a part of that.
Well, thank you very much, Don. Is there anything else you want to add before we go here today?
Well, we are a membership organization, and besides collecting the checkoff from the 45,000 soybean producers, we do appreciate members that are willing to be active. So if you have an interest in joining the Soybean Association, there's district directors, and we have a state office in Bloomington, and we're not hard to find. Illsoy.org is a website you can reach us with, so we'd like to have your membership if you're so inclined.
Again, that was Don Gwinnip of the Illinois Soybean Association. That's all for this morning's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.